You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody. Once a month, we put out a bonus episode, which is kind of a little teaser of one of the shows on the network. Last month, we had a little teaser of what Huh is like with a short episode of that podcast. This month, we have a short episode of my podcast, Grindhouse Messiah. Essentially, I'm going to be sharing with you a little bit of a clip from a previous podcast where we talk about the movie The Debt Collector, which is by Jesse V. Johnson. And we talk about that with our favorite guest, Ed Travis. But before I play you that, I'm going to play you a brief interview I did with director Jesse V. Johnson, and I hope you enjoy it. Tune in later this week for a full episode of Grindhouse Messiah, and check out the other shows here on the Farsighted Network.
This call is now being recorded.
Jesse and Justin, you're connected.
Thank you.
Hey, how's it going,
Justin,
Jesse?
How are you?
Good.
I'm good, man.
Hey, so I'm glad I got a chance to speak to you. Sometime in the near future when you're not doing a ton of press, we got to get you on for a full episode of the podcast. But for now,
I would love
to talk to you for a few minutes.
Any time through social media, any of those, you know, Facebook or Instagram, it's easy to get a hold of me. So definitely
awesome.
Do that.
That's awesome. My podcast is called Grindhouse Messiah, and we've covered a couple of your films already, actually. We had Ed Travis from Synapse on, and he picked some of
I
his
like
favorite.
Him, yeah.
Yeah, he's a big Jesse B. Johnson fan, and a big Scott Atkins fan, too. So I think he likes your team up quite a bit. So we had talked about The Debt Collector. And that was a lot of fun, but I just got to see Avengement. I literally just finished it like an hour ago. A lot of
right.
fun, man. So tell me a little bit about this film and, you know, how it kind of came about and, you know, what people should expect.
Well, Scott and I enjoy working together. We push each other very, very hard in terms of, you know, the discipline and the work and exploring the medium of the action movie and what we can do within what we have, which is we don't get a lot of money assigned to make these movies compared to some of the bigger ones. So it's, you know, you're doing a Rubik's Cube each time, a little sort of, you know, a little equation working out how you can get the best possible story on screen. And so we're constantly looking for ideas. Scott was expecting his second child, did not want to leave England. I had the green light to make a picture with Scott. So I went through my sort of back catalog of scripts that I had, and I had this one that was an English, no, gangster movie. I didn't know if it was right for Scott. It was an enormous sort of character arc, and I wasn't sure if he was in the right place for that yet. And we talked about it, and he read it. We made some changes, and it all really, really worked, you know. And I caught him at that sort of point, but, you know, playing a part like this was something he really wanted to do, you know, going from almost innocent to fully morally corrupted by the third
right.
act, and,
yeah,
you know, and then back again, you know, not only scarred psychologically by his experience, but physically scarred and cut up
right.
and beaten, and you know, and this is an interesting part to play. You know, it's a difficult part to play. You do most, you know, enormous amount of talking, enormous amount of in every scene of the picture almost, and it's a very complex arc. You know, that's being told, obviously, we film out of order, but it's also being told out of order, so we have to almost be more disciplined, you know, in following where he is within the story at any one time. You know, the fights in the prison all had to happen in the correct order. You know, the visits with mother that became more, you know, sort of despondent had to have, you know, happen in a way that was subtle and believable. And it's a tricky part to play, and I thought he did it really, really well. He committed 100% to it. The story itself was, you know, the the concept came from a film that I adored in the, you know, 60s picture called Harakiri by Masaki Kobayashi, you know, where a beat up old samurai walks into a castle and asks to commit suicide. And then from that point, as he relates the story of his day, we suddenly realize he's there for revenge, you know, or it takes a long time to realize he's there for revenge as he reveals each of the bodyguards that he's sort of met on the way to the castle. And I thought that's a really brilliant sort of, you know, concept, a framework to put a story within. And the, you know, the East End gangster hierarchy is a little bit like a samurai hierarchy in that you have, you know, overboss, underbosses, and then bodyguards and forces within that. And so the initial, you know, incubus for the story came from that inspiration. And then on top of that, we wove and built and tied in our own, in my own story, with characters that I had sort of run into and bumped into when I was a kid at the East End, rolling around with those sort of unpleasant people that I was never, part of that, but I enjoyed. I've always been drawn to slightly larger than life characters and watching what makes them tick, you know, it's you know, and you find them there. You really do. It's steeped in a tradition of that sort of gangsterism there. And you know, sort of like Little Italy or New York. Even if you're not a part of it, but you're from that geography, you pretend to be a part of it. You know, you talk like that. You watch how they walk and how they dress, and you know, it's the fashion for that era. You know, you want to look like that. And I've always found it interesting. So it was really a lot of fun to go back to England and make this movie. Done so many sort of abroad, and I think Scott enjoyed it as well. The character was really what drew us both to it, and his story, you know. And then around that, the opportunity to sort of cast some really, really good English actors, really good. You know, we got really lucky with our supporting cast on this. I think it was a phenomenal, phenomenal group of people: Craig Fairbrass and Nick Moran and Kirsten Waring. So that was where the idea came from.
Awesome, and I mean. You know, it's obviously a pretty big year for you, with this coming out, and, you had Triple Threat come out, which seems to have, you know, really gotten a lot of fanfare, because it's kind of like the Expendables that I wanted, not the Expendables that we initially got. It's all the, action stars that are actually good at action as opposed to just big names. So it was pretty awesome to get to see them all together, you know, and, that project is, you know, just kind of insane that it exists, and I'm in love with that one as well. And I guess, you know, you've been working with Scott now for a few films in a row. Have you guys gotten to work together a lot, or like how did that happen?
It's how it's sort of worked out. I mean, he's worked with a lot of other directors in that time. I've done movies, you know, without him. We have a very, very good comfort level working together. Each pushing the other one. You know, you don't have to lay out the ground rules each time. You don't have to work out how a person works. These are complicated films to make. They require a lot of trust and a lot of understanding. There's certain things that, you know, a director cannot do that leading man has to do. I can't direct him how to do certain things, and vice versa. There are things happening where the leading man has to trust his director enormously.
Right.
And so, you know, when you've worked with someone before, that trust is there. It's implicit, and you don't have to question it or think about it twice. And so I enjoy working. For my part, working with an actor like Scott, who's as physically talented, who's as confident in his acting and abilities as he is an absolute joy. You know, I've seen interviews with Hawks where he talks about working with John Wayne. He said, well, honestly, it's because it's one of the easiest jobs imaginable when you make a film with John Wayne, because he does so much work there that you don't have to do anymore. You can focus on doing everything else. And I think that's what happens with Scott. You know, the action is going to be of a level. He can perform physical stunts, but not only physical, and not only stunts, but perform physically. And, you know, the way he moves, it lends itself very, very well to an action movie, to cinema. And where with another actor, I might have to talk him through how to move here, and, you know, we do two or three takes for Scott. He'll look where the camera is, look at what's going on, and you'll get it on the first take, and you've moved on, and you're into the next setup, you know, which is the savings of 45 minutes to an hour each time. So you're moving very, very efficiently with him, and the product is very, very good. It's at a high level. And so you enjoy doing it that way. And if you look at film history, you see directors like Bud Boetiger or Anthony Mann that worked with Gary Cooper over and over. I mean, you know, 16 you know, 15, 16 movies, or John Ford or Hawks working with John Wayne, or you know, into the 20, you know, 25 movies,
and right.
Or Raoul Walsh, or even Houston and Humphrey Bogart. When you have that familiarity and the work benefits from it, it's very, you know, I'm working on obviously a microscopic level compared to those guys, talent wise and you know, scope wise, but it makes it easier, Justin. It's a way of making the job, you know, more fun and sort of, you know, the creative the movies is reflected in that.
Yeah, definitely. You hit on the fact that he's great at physicality and stunts. Like, you had hit on the idea that he's, like, great on physicality and stunts, which is definitely, you know. And I realize
there's no one like him, man.
Yeah, that you have that's kind of your background, right? Before you were a director, didn't you do a lot of stunt performing and stuff?
I did a lot of stunt performing.
That's informed your ability?
Yeah, there's a confidence there. There's ability to do things. I know when something can be done, and I don't want to make a big fuss about it. I don't want to have to prepare, you know, oh my God, is it possible? No, it's, you know, I know how to do things and do them safely and confidently. We get in and we get out. I'm not going to make the stunt people do it a lot of times. I'm not going to make them hurt themselves. But having said that, I'm going to push them to the very limits of their abilities to give me something interesting, fresh looking. You know, with Scott, what you have is an actor who's performing at a physical level that's equatable to the very, very top tier stunt performers in the world. There are very few guys that can keep up with him. I can think of maybe 3 or 4 in the U.S. I've worked with who are able, you know, and these are professional stunt performers, you know, who are able to do what he can do. And you have him as your leading man. And he's able to string a sentence together, and he can actually perform as well. So you're in a very lucky position when you have him as your leading man. It's up to you to craft your picture and your shooting schedule and the way you shoot around what you can do. And that involves collaborating with him and talking to him and bouncing ideas backwards and forwards. And oftentimes he'll come with an idea and it's like, really? And then you look at it and you realize that he knows his instrument. He's talking theater terms. He knows his instrument very, very well at this point in his career, you know, and you get really good stuff, you know, and I'm hoping that we're pushing the envelope as much as we can. We try to sit down and think, what can we do that's different, that, you know, isn't being done by everyone. It's not copying John Wick, you know, like the 101 cheap John Wick ripoffs that are out there. And it's just like,
there seems to be quite a few of them these days. Yeah.
Well, you know, so, it's nothing new. Like when Matrix came out, you know, when Pulp Fiction came out, everyone copied it. So you just avoid, you know, that kind of crap, and you try to focus on doing something that's, you know, that's interesting, your own voice. Or if you're going to copy something, go back 20, 30, 40 years and do your spin on it. But trying to keep it original, trying to reinvent the wheel and not to repeat ourselves. And he gets that. He enjoys it.
Right.
We, you know, every once in a while we'll sit down and say, we did this before, didn't we? Yeah, but it fucking worked then. So there's no hard rules, you know.
So sorry to interrupt, but Justin, if you have a final question now, is a great time for it.
Sounds good. I was actually looking at that. So, yeah, be cognizant of your time. The one last question I wanted to ask, which is kind of just because you were talking about a lot of this cookie-cutter stuff that people go, but, you know, if one of the big guys, you know, if Marvel or DC came to you or something like that and you got your chance to work with, like, one character, what's a character that you've always wanted to, you know, be able to put on screen?
Well, funnily enough, I didn't grow up with Marvel or DC so much. I had 2000 AD in the UK, which is where Judge Dredd came from. I don't know if you're familiar with Judge Dredd.
They made that movie
twice. Accident Man was a comic book written by one of those artists, and that's one we did, and ended up talking with him. And my favorite character was a character called Slane, who was a little bit like Conan the Barbarian, but he was more English and more violent, and he would transform when he got mad into this sort of, you know, almost Hulk-like beast. And I wanted to do that with Scott. You know, it's a bit tied up in a legal sort of copyright at the moment, but Slane I absolutely loved. And you know, I have a deep and rich, you know, love for, you know, European and English, you know, Arthurian-type legends, you know, the legends of the woods and the hobgoblins and, you know, the will-o'-the-wisp and the Strat fairies and things like that, and Slane really dealt with that. He was a barbarian, a monster, you know, the tattooed up barbarian with a huge sword, and you know, and he would shapeshift. He'd go through berserker moments, which was something that Vikings supposedly did. They take hallucinogenic bark and become berserkers. And Slane was a berserker, and he actually would change form. So that was one that I really, really wanted to do. And that would be, you know, you tell it on a big canvas. You'd want 50 or 100 million. You'd tell it on a very, very large canvas, and it would be a blast. But I'd love to do a Conan movie. I love Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
You know, the original top. You know, the comic book from the 70s, in the early 80s, I guess, would have been when I would have been reading it. The regular superheroes, I think, have been done so, so well. I worked on 2 Spider-Man movies and a Thor movie, and I just feel you're entering a territory that has really been, at this point in the game, it's really been plumbed, and you've gone about as far as you can. But there are, you know, the sword and sorcery and the sort of more legendary cultish figures, I think they're, you know, there is room to do something new there. I think you can go there, you know, and do something brilliant. And there were some great, great bad guys to be fought against. I like that. I think there was one character in Daredevil that I like. Was it Bullseye, the bad guy? I directed a Wonder Woman and a Lobo teaser reel when I was, you know, trying to reinvent myself as a director. And the Wonder Woman one had done very, very well, and it came out just before the Warner Brothers one. And, you know, they talked to me, and it was a very exciting process. It went viral and got a billion hits in a day and all that kind of stuff. It was quite fascinating. And for a little while there, I played with the idea of doing a Bullseye character. You know, we'd follow him from childhood, you know, learning that he had this incredible skill, and almost as an anti-hero. But, you know, I think I got a job offer at that point. I had been successful with reinventing myself, and my career started again, so I didn't have time to go back and do another short, and haven't since, knock on wood, thankfully.
Albert Mitchell, Pete Singlehurst, James Webb, Eric Godley, Sandy Park, Miriam Silverman, and now Mabel Little. And there's 150 or so other families. Children have been orphaned because of your brother's business, so you listen to me. I mean, you listen to me very carefully. Manslaughter, and I'll bring you the least of your problems, mate. I'm throwing organized crime at you. I'm a fucking lawyer, all right? You're listening to me. I want a lawyer. I don't know anything about this. What about my rights? Your rights are to give up your brother, mate. Them's the only rights I can have. This operation implodes without your brother. Maybe then 100 or so other people can move on with their lives. Come on, mate. Give me a brother. Let's just finish this right now. How about bollocks?
But yeah, so The Debt Collector, new movie. And this is one that stars your boy Scott Atkins. And tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, as much as, like, the Scott Atkins love train is just, you know, full speed ahead, I mean, I make it a point to try to seek out all of his movies and review them if I can, but I don't just blanket give them positive reviews. I mean, he is in movies sometimes that aren't good, you know? That's just a fact. And it tends to be, though, the more he's able to sort of insert his own sort of vision and creativity and or utilize his skill set, you know, the better the movie is. So a lot of times when he's in a movie that I don't really find anything to love, it's probably just a situation where he was on set just doing his lines, doing his thing, you know, it wasn't necessarily a great film. So this one I wasn't so sure about. The trailer wasn't quite there for me. So I was kind of going in like, I'm gonna seek this out, I'm gonna check it out, and then I just ended up being like completely blown away. Like, I absolutely flipped for this one. And so Jesse V. Johnson, who directed this one and also wrote it, I'm a little new to him. He did a film called Savage Dog with Scott Adkins within the last couple of years, and that one was just crazy brutal, like so violent, but fun violent, unlike the Universal Soldier movies. And so I was like, okay, I've got one movie that I've seen where the two of these guys are together, and it was pretty awesome. And so this one, it just kind of blew me away, because this was one of these times where I'm watching a DTV action film and I'm like, this, you know, if this was made in the 70s, like, this would have just been in theaters, you know? I mean, it's got a real 1970s crime film vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the comedy clicks. Scott Atkins really hasn't had an opportunity very much in his career to do comedy. And even sometimes if he tried it earlier, I don't know if he was there yet. I mean, you were talking, Blaine, about how he's kind of just continued to steadily improve and become this, triple threat of, he's got the comedy chops down at this point, and the acting chops, and he also, the script just works perfectly in this movie to let him beat the crap out of people throughout the movie too. But it's sort of like in service of the story, in a way that isn't the case for like Undisputed. I mean, Undisputed's great because it's this, you know, constant fights start to finish, you know. This one's great because it's a great script. It's a great movie, you know, that utilizes Scott Adkins in a way that pushes him kind of to the next level.
Absolutely. And I mean, one thing that's so significantly different with him than say as playing Boyka is with being such a good script and him being a little bit more confident, as you know, you kind of see that confidence. He's charming. He's a leading man in the movie, which you know, it lends really great to, you know, fleshing out Boyka in that fourth film. But I don't know, it's just you can just tell he's so comfortable. The lines feel real, and I was just completely shocked at how charming is the word for it in that movie, because you like him, you root for him, and I love that he's an action, you know, he's this badass who's constantly whining and bitching about this job. Like, every time he has to do anything, he just whines and whines. I don't know, I think he plays that role so well. And yeah, this is another one, man, because I'll be honest, I was taking your word. This was the last of the films that I watched. I was like, okay, he's been great with the taste, but this is a terrible, all the one sheets and everything were awful. The trailer was very underwhelming. But then, like you said, it's like this 70s style, it's very much a Los Angeles movie, you know, where, you know, you're driving around from kind of, you know, L.A. site to L.A. site. And, you know, I think, yeah, like you said, this was made in 1979, it would have just been a movie, not this kind of, like, tucked away, you can get it on, you know, you can rent it, maybe pick it up in the red box after it's been out for a while kind of movie. But no, I mean, this felt very much like a polished Hollywood film.
And you know what, you mentioned it's an L.A. movie. You know what's funny, it's an L.A. movie, and the main characters are a British dude and a New York tough guy. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is really funny, but like their chemistry is fantastic too. Like, you're right. Like, the comedic timing works on both of they just work well. It's clear. I forgot. Like, you know, I don't remember that Scott Adkins is a bitch. I just don't, because the only things I've seen him as Boyka, which is Russian, you know, and then I've seen him do like as an American, and I'm like. Which he's not, but you know, he's obviously can sound American, and I forgot how, like, you know, and it's got a very British thing about him. That's part of that charm, I think, too, you know. I said to Blaine, it's like it felt kind of like I was watching a Guy Ritchie movie without that over style, you know, like it had that kind of flair to it, but without that, like. I like Guy Ritchie, but he's like all style, no substance. There's actually like substance here, you know, which I dig. I really dug this one a lot. In fact, you know, like Universal Soldier is probably the only one of these three that I'm not gonna go buy pretty soon. Now, is there a possibility I'll buy it down the road? Sure, but like the other two, like they both were fantastic movies for me.
Yeah. So Jesse V. Johnson is now somebody who I have, like, same deal. I kind of, like, looked him up, found out he's actually been directing stuff for a long time, you know, have sought out and checked out a couple of his older movies, and, like, just been having a blast sort of, like, going down his, you know, his career. And he's really, he's like an action guy to the core. I mean, he's been doing
He's a stunt performer and stunt coordinator for a lot of like big name stuff too.
And what's happened is that he's really teamed up with with Scott Adkins in a pretty serious way. So, like, they did Savage Dog, then they actually did Accident Man, then they did Debt Collector, and now they're doing Triple Threat, which is coming out this year, which just
looks so fucking good.
That's like the sort of Avengers of DTV action, which is coming up soon. So I just love that they've formed this sort of, you know, and they actually met way back when. There's, speaking of Pit Fighter, he directed a movie called Pit Fighter and had an early Scott Adkins role in there. So these guys just go back, and I feel like it's one of these things where their creative partnership has allowed, you know, it's allowed Scott Adkins to try his hand more at comedy and just get a little bit more confident. I mean, he produced, Scott Adkins produced Accident Man, so he even co-wrote it, I think. So he's kind of getting this chance to expand his skill set and try things that he's never done before. And I feel like their collaboration together is sort of what's allowing that. And so I just love, I mean, like, after, it's like, you know, they've literally hit three out of the park between Savage Dog and Accident Man and Debt Collector. It's just sort of like unbelievable that these guys have found each other and that they're just, you know, kicking ass.
Yeah, I don't have the experience with his other films yet, but I certainly will be checking out Savage Dog because I'm relatively sure that's still on Netflix. And that's definitely one I can dive into. And, you know, I guess really what it comes down to is, like, this was just a really fun movie. Of the three, it might be the most fun. Probably because it's got the buddy humor thing going on. But the, you know, you're, I like that not only does he dish out beatings, but he takes huge beatings, too.
That's true. Like,
and it's pretty great just watching him get his ass whooped and then get back up and just keep going. And you know, I love that he's, you know, he's in doing the dirty work while the other guy's getting laid at one point. You know, it's just, it's pretty great.
Oh, yeah.
It's old. I mean, it's got that 70s vibe. It's just,
it really does.
Feels like something that would have been made in the 70s, including sort of, it's like a little downbeat, you know, there's a little, you know, social commentary in there, just enough to sort of, you know, to make you realize this is a grimy world these guys are traversing, you know.
Yeah, and isn't it nice seeing Tony Todd do something at least relatively interesting? Like, I always think he's one of the biggest wastes of talent in, you know, independent film. Where Tony Todd, you see him, he's such a arranged and interesting actor who's just like, I guess he's just cool with the convention scene. But this is a movie where you can see him deliver lines and do something, at least it's something, you know. And I think it kind of helps elevate the stakes really well. And I, the whole time I look at him, he's not winking at the camera going, you know, I'm Candyman, you know, remember me. It's nice to see him in a real role.
Right. Yeah.
Which I feel like Absolutely. For 20 years, he's just been winking at us.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, you know, those in those movies that are like, you know, starring Felicity Rose, Tony Todd, you know, and whoever else is on the circuit. So I thought that was fantastic. And man, I am really excited about his upcoming film, Triple Threat. Because one thing I was going to mention with these kind of straight to video, I've been kind of relying on Welgo USA for the past couple of years just to like deliver me things, basically. Like, hey, here's a cool, you know, Chinese film or Korean film. And I had no idea that was going to kind of come around because I think both myself and Justin were watching the trailers for The Endless.
Yeah, it was on The Endless disc, yeah.
And I was like, dude, this looks fucking awesome. And I was like, I wish I knew more about direct to video action. And you were like, hey, well, we've been needing to get Ed on the show and he'll pick out something. I was like, okay, that's kind of the catalyst. It's kind of the catalyst of this whole episode was like me going, dude, Triple Threat looks rad, man, and I wish I knew more.
Yeah, and that's sort of that movie looks like it's sort of like the perfect culmination of, you know, Jesse V. Johnson has sort of come up in the DTV world, but those guys that are starring in Triple Threat are those international action stars who are used to their films actually, you know, being released around the world. And, you know, those are theatrical films in their home countries that we get on Blu-ray over here, you know.
In Hollywood now, Between I don't know how to pronounce his name from the Raid films, Uko Iwe. I'm sure that's so wrong. And Tony Jaa. I mean, both of those guys have crossed over and done some you know big action for Hollywood films, especially with what's it called, 22 Miles, that's coming out next month.
Mile 22.
Yeah, I mean. He's with Marky Mark, isn't?
Yep, and he was in Star Wars too.
Yeah, he's in Star Wars. So I mean, it's
kind of wasted there, but he was there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then once we get to our recommendations, I might be talking about that guy again. You can hear me say his name wrong again.
Yeah, and I also did appreciate. I like Michael Paré. I like that he popped up in this film.
That's
too.
Right. Yeah.
Mad Alex at the end. You know. Yeah. I mean.
He's honestly good in it. I guess I just, throughout the movie, I mean, Louis Mandalore.
Yeah, he's great.
So good. I just couldn't, you know, I feel like Jesse Johnson pulled, like, real performances out of these guys, you know. And again, he had his at-bat. He's just been knocking out of the park. I think he's really, you know, brought his A-game to these movies. And I love when they don't, you know, take themselves so seriously that they think of these movies as below them or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting an opportunity to put his calling card out there, and he's killing it.
No doubt. So, you know, any kind of wrapping these up, any closing thoughts on these films and or kind of just the whole you said is kind of like a renaissance, you feel like, of direct TV to video you know, action, or in general, it's like almost like a renaissance of action. It's just now in a different way. You know, any kind of closing thoughts or, you know, on that? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I make zero apologies for my love for these movies. And I think that, you know, if people do give them a chance, like with these, the best of the best that the whole, you know, DTV universe has to offer, I don't think they're just good for DTV. Like, I think they're really good movies, you know. It's an easy sort of qualifier to say, oh, I think, you know, Universal Soldier Regeneration might be like the best DTV movie. That's reality. That's realistic. But frankly, like, I think it's just a good movie, you know. There are certain limitations. There's certain sort of, you know, there's small budgets and they're almost always shot in Bulgaria, like you said, and things like that, that kind of run through all of them. But I mean, that's just a part of this particular genre, you know? But I just legitimately think that there's some, you know, we are in kind of an action film renaissance. You can go to the cinema and see John Wick and, you know, Mad Max Fury Road and the Mission Impossible movies, and you're seeing unbelievable, like, mind blowing action. But there's also this, you know, there's unbelievable human stakes with these films, you know. And I think that's part of why I love them, is that you're not getting a ton of CGI. You're getting, like, human beings with unbelievable physical talent doing things that are still going to be what people are flocking to movies to see 100 years from now, you know. Like, I feel like right now we're sort of enamored with CGI and the big bloat of Marvel and everything. But I feel like, you know, there's nothing more pure to me than sitting down and watching Scott Adkins and Michael Jai White just, you know, exerting themselves and taking their physical abilities to the limit. So I love the stuff. And I think, you know, if people like action movies at all, they got to suck up any sort of reservations they have about DTV world and just check this stuff out.
Hold on, mate. Members only.
If you want me to break one of my rules and lend you money, then you're going to have to do something for me.
You follow her home, you take the bag off of her, and you bring it back here. You come back here without that bag, you're on your own.
Guilty as charged. Your sentence is extended by 1 year. I hereby find you guilty 2 years.
So that was worth it, mate.
20 grand.
From where?
Think your brother's bankrolling it?
My brother did this. Come on in. Don't be shy.